Hey guys, welcome back to the Far Better Podcast. I am your host, Michael Clark, and I am doing okay. I appreciate Wayne last week kind of giving a brief synopsis of what was going on. You that have listened from the very beginning of this show on Scattered Abroad know I have Crohn's disease. It's a lifelong condition. There is no current cure. And it's an autoimmune disease, so it basically means that my body attacks itself. And I guess if you meet me, you probably get why my body would want to do that. I had a flare-up, it seemed, from Monday of last week until Friday of last week. And for the first time ever, ended up staying in the hospital, being admitted. I'd gone twice before, but I had never been admitted. But this time it was bad enough that I needed to be admitted. I actually had thought my appendix burst because the pain was so unique and different from a normal Crohn's attack that I thought it had to be something other than Crohn's, and ended up staying in the hospital for about 4 days. I was at my wife's hospital, and they took very good care of me. I'm back on the mend, and my doctors now are even saying that it's possible that I have more of an infection that was maybe a viral bug that was going around that just attacked me in a more violent way. But I'm doing okay. I'm thankful to be back and ready to give you a 2-episode today. You're going to get 2. The first 2 of Philadelphia. We have to cover last week, and we got to cover this week's. Kind of have no choice but to do that because I'm behind. So this first episode that we're getting done today is episode number 144. Episode 16 on the season, and it is the church at Philadelphia. Perseverance pays off. And I don't know as in-depth as I would like about each of these cities. I know the backgrounds that I've been able to provide, and I'm sure there are other backgrounds that others may know of that are even in-depth to a degree that I've not been able to cover. But I don't have the knowledge firsthand like I would my own city or you would your own city. But I want you to think for just a moment about some places where you're just going to see some things that are not pleasant to see. And you've got to still somehow find a way to thrive. And I don't know about your specific city, but I know there are places in my city where I live that I wouldn't want to go to as a Christian because nothing good's going to come from that. I know there are places in probably every city or town where you would find things going on that you just would not agree with and would want to say, hey, what are we doing? Why is this happening? As we cover Philadelphia, this is the city's background itself before we get into the text. King Attalus Philadelphus II of Pergamum, he built the city out of affection for his brother, hence the name Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, which was Echimenes II. It was located on the main route between east and west, and it was a wealthy trade city known for its vineyards and farming. Not surprisingly, what came from that is that the city had many festivals dedicated to the god Dionysus, the Greek god of wine and intoxication. In AD 17, an earthquake destroyed Philadelphia, and Sardis to the northwest suffered worse damage from the initial quake, you might remember, but Philadelphia suffered through several severe aftershocks, which ended up terrifying the population. Because of the earthquake threat, many of the inhabitants ended up refusing to live in the city, but instead chose to live in small farmhouses outside of the city. Emperor Tiberius assisted in reconstruction, and for a time, the city was called Neo Caesarea, or New Caesar, as a tribute to the assistance from Rome. By the 3rd century, though, as we get into the church's background, the city itself was known for giving itself to idolatrous worship, and had even become, to some, called Little Athens. And as we've talked about with most of the 7 churches, the church at Philadelphia was likely established when the gospel spread from the efforts of Paul while he was in Ephesus, Acts 19:10 and verse 26. But as we jump into Revelation chapter 3, beginning in verse 7, I want to point out this main point of today, which is that perseverance pays off. Perseverance pays off, okay? And this is really going to cover verses 7 through 9, but I want you to kind of look at this and really kind of think about it and remind yourself of some things. Number one, Jesus shows his true character. To the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, "These things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens." You know, if you've had any type of Sunday schooling, if you've had any type of interaction with religion, you know that a tenet of religious belief is that Jesus is holy, and that God himself is holy. Leviticus 11, 44 and 45, "Be ye holy, for I am holy," the King James Version says. You talk about Paul with 1 Corinthians 11, 1, "Imitate me as I imitate Christ." Why would we want to imitate someone if they weren't holy and righteous and worthy of imitation? But think of how this starts. "These things says he who is holy." Think about that for a second. In Acts 3 and verse 14, there's a point here where it says, "You denied the Holy One and the just and asked for a murderer to be granted to you," talking about the day when Jesus was put before the people with Barabbas and they chose Barabbas. Can you imagine picking Barabbas over Christ? And yet that's what happened. And here is a church in Philadelphia that is going to be given an instruction to persevere and press on. And it starts by saying, "He who is holy." There is no sin, iniquity, immorality of any kind found within Christ. He is perfect. That's what perseverance requires. To think about Jesus as a man, God in the flesh, tempted in all points as man has been tempted. Perseverance is a huge tenet of what we need to believe. And his holiness is found through his perseverance. But not only is he holy, he's true. You know, when Satan speaks, it's easy to know that he's not telling the truth. In John 8 and verse 44, we're told that he was a murderer from the beginning, but when he speaks, he tells a lie. But then you contrast that with Jesus saying in John 14, 6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me." And you think about even John 5, 1 John 5 and verse 20, "We know that the Son of God has come and given us an understanding that we may know him who is true. And we are in him who is true, in his Son, Jesus Christ." Watch this. "This is the true God and eternal life." But in the same thing here, jumping down just seven more verses in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 14, the Bible tells me, "To the church of the Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness." He who is true, he's not going to tell you a lie. There's not going to be a promise or an action that will not come to pass because he is truth. And finally, in Revelation 19 and verse 11, it says, "Now I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called faithful and true." You sometimes have heard the mindset of this, it's tried and true. It'll always come to be. In contrast to Satan, Jesus will always see it through. Always. But not with Satan. That's not who Satan is. Because Satan's a liar. And that's what we have to choose. It's incredible, the imagery and the... not the drama of it all, but just how it comes full circle. Here is the day that Jesus is going to be crucified, and there's a murderer, a horrible man standing next to Christ, and the people have to choose. Who do we want? Give us the murderer. And yet now, as you and I think about a spiritual application, we make that choice every day between serving Christ, the true and holy one, or a murderer from the beginning. Boy, that makes that song that we've sometimes sung at church camp and VBSs and maybe even in worship services, "Can He Still Feel the Nails," cut a little bit deeper, because it's not just that when I sin, does Jesus feel the nails, but he's got to also feel the rejection that he had to have felt the day that it was known. Here's a thief by brutality, meaning he was a murderer, and the people are crying out for him to be released so that they could kill an innocent man. And then you and I wake up and we have the opportunity to choose to serve Christ or to serve the devil and murderer. And if we're honest with ourselves, as we should be, who have we picked throughout history? We have at times chosen to align ourselves with a murderer. That's why in John 8:44 we're told that we are of our father, the devil, the people that we're being talked to there, of course, but it applies even for me. The desires of your father, you want to do it. Nobody's forcing you. Nobody forced that crowd to start chanting to crucify Christ. Nobody was twisting the arm of that crowd or pointing arrows at them or holding up javelins and doing anything of the sort to where they had to pick Barabbas to be released. They wanted him to be released. What a shame that I've done the same thing, and so have you. Jesus shows us his true character. And if you've ever had your character called into question, this should resonate with us. This one tiny little verse should resonate with us that we sometimes have possibly been dragged through the mud, and things have been said about us and stuff has been proposed and talked and surmised and it's not been true, and we know the truth. But maybe you slump in your chair at night and you just feel so downtrodden that does no one know who I am? Doesn't it seem that Jesus is saying something similar here? I'm the true and holy one. Love me. Serve me. Now, Jesus then also shifts to this mindset in verses 7 and 8 about he who opens and no one shuts and shuts and no one opens. Look at some passages here in the Old Testament and then the New Testament. In Isaiah 22:22, the Bible says, "The key of the house of David I will lay on his shoulder, so he shall open, and no one shall shut, and he shall shut, and no one shall open." But then you get to Matthew chapter 28 and verse 18, where Jesus says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." You couple that mentality where Jesus was telling Peter in Matthew chapter 16, "I'll give you the keys to the kingdom, and whatever you open or bind on earth will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose will be loosed in heaven," basically saying, "I'm giving you the opportunity to bind and loose." And it's incredible how we get to these passages and look at them, and it talks about this mentality of a door that is open that no one can shut. Why is it not possible to be shut? Not because of Peter, in the sense of Matthew chapter 16, where Peter's preaching. It's not because Peter's so great, it's because Jesus has given him that ability. If the door is open and no one can shut it, that's interesting to think about. When you read verse 8 where it says, "I know your works. See, I've set before you an open door, and no one can shut it. For you have a little strength. You've kept my word and have not denied my name." He commends them for what they're doing. And it's interesting. All seven of these churches, they had this phrase within, "I know you. I know your works. I know who you are." This isn't just written to the leadership at Philadelphia, though it certainly applied to them. This wasn't just written to the elders or just to the deacons or even just to the preacher saying, hey, this is what you guys need to know. It is written to the membership as a whole. From the greatest in authority to the least in authority, all were needed to do what's right. Jesus is going to bless all of us with opportunities to abound if we do our part. Think about that, an open door and no one can shut it. Why are churches struggling to grow? We got to get uncomfortable for a minute here, but it needs to be talked about, right? Why are churches struggling to grow? Is it because no one wants to be receptive? Or is it because no one wants to walk through the open door that Christ has said is there? There is work involved, of course, in trying to do personal evangelism. There's work involved in trying to grow the kingdom in the area that you're living. And it does not just come from the preacher. It does not just come from the elders. It does not just come from the deacons. It comes from all of us. And I think we need to have a little come to Jesus meeting in so many of the congregations where there's this belief that it's the minister's job only to be growing the congregation. Verse 8 doesn't say, see, you preachers, I've set before you an open door. No one can shut it. You have a little strength. You've kept my word. You've not denied my name, but you got to go through that door. It doesn't say that. You and I have to have some uncomfortable conversations with ourselves, both in our own desire to do what's right, but also as a church, as a congregation, to say, are we doing what's right? Think about some of these passages here, if we do our part, what the New Testament teaches on this. Acts 14 and verse 27 says, now when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them, and watch this, that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. That's an interesting way to word that, isn't it? Opened the door of faith. I've set before you an open door, and no one can shut it. Just walk through it. All you got to do is obey and do what needs to be done to go through that door, and no one can stop you. 1 Corinthians 16:9 even says, for a great and effective door has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 12, furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, a door was opened to me by the Lord. And finally, Colossians 4 and verse 3, meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I'm also in chains. Friends, I struggle to say this, but I think it needs to be said. The only reason a church does not grow is because it refuses to go through the open door that Christ has set before them. You see, these people in Philadelphia had little strength, but they'd kept his word, they'd not denied his name. And he consoles them here in the face of some severe opposition that's about to come their way. And it's interesting how he says, I've set before you an open door, but then watch verse 9. Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Indeed, I'll make them come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. He's promising this complete vindication. And what a strong rebuke to be called the synagogue of Satan, right? Some individuals are of the belief that the synagogue of Satan here is talking about Jewish leaders who were persecuting the church. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. It makes sense because I was thinking about this the other day with some of the religious things that happen out there. That the devil doesn't hate religion. The devil hates righteousness. Religion is fine, as long as you're not truly righteous before God. Religion is totally normal and completely A-OK with him because he'll still get you in the end if you don't do what righteousness requires. Here's the interesting point of this first section of Philadelphia. Though they thought they had the truth, like Paul, these religious leaders or the people who are persecuting them, they may have thought that they were doing what was right. They were actually persecuting the one they claimed to serve. Look at verse 10 and we'll close there because I've gone over. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Because you have kept my command to what? Persevere. I will keep you from the hour of trial, which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. You and I know perseverance pays off. There's so many things in life where perseverance comes into play, and it's a huge part of our everyday living. It pays off. Lord willing, next week we'll pick back up here and talk about, well, not next week, excuse me, next episode. It's going to come right after this one, so tune in and listen. It's a two for today. We'll talk about not letting go of the crown, and then next week we will talk about the text takeaways from the church at Philadelphia. Until then, let's remember to please God now so our eternity can be far better.